We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Martin Galston of Oncommune, a leading autoantibody profiling company servicing the biopharma and contract research organization industries. So welcome, Martin.
Thanks very much, Paul. Great to be back. Good to see you again. That's quite a mouthful, isn't it, really? Well, we need to work on shortening that, don't we?
Yeah, I know. Well, anyway, big congrats on yesterday's inline first half results and continued successful turnaround strategy. But we've always sort of run through that. Let's sort of like unpeel some of the onion, as we talked about earlier on. Can you just remind investors of exactly what the company does? And perhaps use an example.
Yes, sure. So as you said, we're an autoantibody profiling business. What we like to say is that we enable precision medicine. And our customer base is the pharmaceutical industry. Just across the pharmaceutical industry, across the whole of the R&D value chain, where we operate really is at the discovery end, and at the later stage clinical trials end, before a drug gets approved to market. Historically, what we've done is we've been in that late clinical trial approval space, and we've used our technology to basically measure the response of an immune system in a patient to a drug in a trial. And we measure them before they take the drug, so we get a baseline. Then we measure them after they've taken the drug and then after they've left the trial. And what happens is the response they have to the drug in the trial is then linked to the outcome of the patient. So the patient may finish the trial and be well, fantastic. They may have a serious adverse event, have an issue on the drug, which means they stop. Not great, but we will be measuring their antibody response to the drug in that eventuality. And in the case, sadly, of many the oncology trials, then sadly the patients may die. But again, regardless of outcome, we will have measured their pattern of autoantibody response whilst before the drug and on the drug. It's that crucial linkage of that information to the outcome information that enables the pharmaceutical company to say, patients that exhibit that pattern of response in their autoantibody tend to go on to develop this serious adverse event or tend to have a good outcome. And what we can do is then use that information at the next clinical trial to either stratify the patients to go into that trial and be successful, which helps enrich the trial, for want of a better word, or we can use it to try to spot those patients that might encounter problems in the trial before they happen, so that those problems can be managed proactively. In the case of an example would be with immuno-oncology therapy or CAR-T therapy. There is a condition that patients can get on CAR-T therapy called CRS or cytokine storms. And really it's where the immune system becomes overactive, hyperactive, and it can cause enormous problems for the patient medically. Being able to spot that in advance and manage it has a twofold advantage to the pharmaceutical sponsor on the trial. One is obviously the patients do better and the patients have a good, better outcome. But also it could be a sign the drug is working well and hopefully it gives them a better response overall. So it's a double whammy. It's very, very valuable to the pharmaceutical industry and companies. And our approach seems to be one approach that could lead to a better understanding of the patients that might go on to develop that into that problem.
Yeah. So if basically I'm somebody like Roche, et cetera, and I'm developing a, you know, new drug, et cetera, and I put it into a person's body because you're taking specifically on the sort of precision medicine, it will help me as I am, you know, Roche, to predict and to monitor side effects as well as the positive therapeutic benefits. So if you've got, you know, you've put a a vaccine in there, then to see the benefits of the immune system, and you could also see the side effects of that drug. Plus, obviously, when you choose that particular patient, they can use that for sort of the clinical trials, the stratification, if that person is going to be responding well to the treatment or responding poorly to the treatment. And then you sort of like size that to get better, presumably, trial results for then the regulators to approve.
Yeah, and another regulatory related reason for using the technology in a trial is setting is to work out the mode of action of the drug. How is the drug working? So regulators are very keen on that these days because they need to understand biologically what the drug is doing so they can understand them for themselves what the side effects of the drug might be or the risks of taking the drug might be and also why it might work. Yeah. And so by using our platform, you can also understand the mode of action of the drug. So sometimes customers might come to us having run a clinical trial and had a result they weren't expecting. And they have a hypothesis that part of the driver of the result they weren't expecting was the immune response. Mm. Then they come to us to say, can you run the samples retrospectively for us and spot any odd patterns of expression or behavior in the immune response in those patients that might help us to explain what's gone wrong, what's happened here?
Yeah. And I'm guessing sort of precision medicine is a major sort of secular growth driver in the sort of biopharma industry, isn't it? It's sort of like tailoring the actual particular treatment to the individual.
It is. It's really become more than a buzzword. I think it really is how medicines are now developed. I think the early low-hanging fruit of having the very big blockbuster drugs that get put out for broad indications are kind of more or less over. And we're now looking increasingly at stratified patient populations where hopefully a drug is more effective within that population and more safe. And most drugs being developed now have some kind of precision medicine approach attached to them. I mean, so-called bispecifics, where you have an antibody attached to a small molecule drug that's like the payload, the warhead, are very common, where you've got the specificity of the antibody attacking the target and then the drug to knock the target out or perturb the biochemical pathway that is thought to cause the disease. So those are most major pharma have programs in that space running at the moment, and their attraction of that is their specificity coupled with the ability to knock out either a disease causing protein or a pathway.
Yeah, this is a massive market. Now, I did actually see from the sort of slide deck that the business is now moving also into other therapeutic areas, but one in particular is sort of like understanding aging, which, yeah. Can you just sort of give us a bit of color on this one?
Yeah, this is really cool. So I think we talked before when we released our new commercial strategy and our new focus areas for the business, where we came out with, after a lot of internal research, where we felt the technology might be very applicable. And we've reviewed that strategic approach quarterly ever since. And this came out from, you know, feedback from customers, feedback from our sales teams of areas that might be of interest. And a lot of the therapeutic indications we work with already are associated with aging, of course. So immune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, neurodegeneration. But what we're talking about here are the fundamental mechanisms of aging themselves. And it's a really interesting space. So when your immune system is young, when you're young, your immune system learns what is self and non-self in the body. And so it can recognize if there's an infection or an insult to the body that can be dealt with. As you age, your genetics and your proteomics and the way that those work to deliver proteins to your body start to make mistakes. And you can end up with proteins that don't look quite how they used to look. They could be slightly modified with things called post-translational modifications, which are simple chemical processes that alter the protein. And the immune system may not see them as self anymore and decide to attack them. And it's thought this could be a mechanism behind some of the autoimmune diseases we see. Now, the chemical transformation that could mimic those post-translational modifications are relatively simple to do. And our hypothesis is if we take our 9,000 antigen library and we treat that library in such a way that we mimic those post-translational modifications, we're producing aged proteins, proteins that could be in the body that have naturally aged. We would then be able to pick them up. So we'd be able to pick up the autoantibodies reacting to those proteins in the body. So we could mimic or build a panel of age-related biomarkers associated with the mechanisms of aging, either in specific diseases or more generally. And that's really exciting. And weirdly, once we came up with this hypothesis and we started to socialize it a bit, we've had two companies independently come to us asking us to do just that, to apply a translational modification approach to our library to look for these, some of these specific markers. So that for me is a really interesting, scientifically very interesting piece of work and a new commercial direction for us as a business that I think could be interesting.
Yeah, I would agree. And then just in terms of sort of the sort of total industry demand picture, obviously we went when the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England increased interest rates, it sort of put a bit of a brake on a lot of the sort of development programs. How, just more broadly, is the industry sort of, like, you know, progressing its sort of discovery and its drug development?
So there's been no doubt there's been a slowdown in investment in biotech. New biotechs being formed were down last year compared to previous years. Obviously, the number of IPOs almost stopped. And large pharma itself has been going through some pretty big R&D reorgs that have slowed them down, slowed down decision-making processes. And there's been a wave of them. So some of them went a couple of years ago, and some of them are now going through that process now. And that does have the unfortunate effect of slowing down decision-making in terms of outsourcing or new research projects, which is a shame. But what we are seeing are the green shoots of improved investment and appetite, particularly in the US. It always starts in the US. We're always 6 months behind. But we're also seeing some of the larger pharma, we, us personally, coming out of this fugue state of not deciding what to do and starting to unlock budgets again and unlock projects. And that's a really positive, and I take it hopeful sign, both for us and for the industry.
Yeah, no, it's certainly moving in the right direction. Okay, could we just move to the sort of the, you know, the turnaround and the strategy and also the sort of commercialization? How are you progressing? I did obviously see that the sales for the first half were higher actually than the total sales for the full year from the previous 12 months. So well done there. But overall, is things moving to plan?
Yeah, so in February, I think we went out saying that our revenue guidance for the year was approximately 3 million. We've now been able to reconfirm that today. So we're still on track to hit 3 million of revenue for the year. That would be three times last year and probably 1.5 times what they've ever done out of that unit in Germany. And I think for me, that's just the start. So obviously behind that is a pipeline of other opportunities that we're tracking and measuring. And I think as at the publication of the the time point at which we took those half year figures, we had another 15 contracts in discussion with customers. And the weighted pipeline for that is something like over 2.5 million of revenue. And a weighted pipeline for us in our hands is we apply a risk factor against those contracts in discussion. Good. So, and we're adding new proposals and contracts to those all the time. So that gives me some comfort and also some encouragement that we're not just hitting our numbers this year, we're building a pipeline for next year. Next year, the key goal for us next year is to make a profit, to be profitable.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just looking at the broker Cavendish, and it has £6.9 million for revenues for next year and adjusted EBIT of 1.2 and be sort of cash flow sort of positive as well. So it is going to be a real step change, a breakthrough year for the business to do that. And I know it's early stages and stuff like that, but how much sort of visibility and sort of confidence do you have in that at the moment? It's obviously plenty of time to go, but just to sort of like, just give investors a bit of a feel about this sort of the achievability.
Yeah, so unlike SaaS businesses or software licensing businesses, we're never going to expect to see 75 plus revenue coverage for next year. We're project based, but we can certainly see potentially up to 50% of next year's revenue in the hop already, which is very encouraging. And, you know, maybe more if things go our way. So it's very encouraging and pleasing considering the start we had at the start of this year. So I joined Oncommune at the beginning of August, which was the end of the previous financial year. And, you know, in our Salesforce system, once we cleaned it up, going into this year, we had something like 33 33 leads and three opportunities. And we've now at least 15 opportunities and over 900 leads in the system just because of focusing on the business, focusing on the commercials, and starting to build out a larger commercial team that is effective and active. And so, you know, the commercial team is now five, two in the Europe and three in the US. And three of them only started from December last year, so they're relatively new. But we're seeing really encouraging signs of the activities they're generating, the opportunities they're uncovering for the business that we wouldn't have found otherwise. We certainly wouldn't have been able to get. And so I do believe that we're building momentum here. And all of the things we're putting into place, the new commercial strategy, the new areas of focus for the business, the strong cash management and financial reporting behind the business now, the way that we record and monitor our pipeline, our sales pipeline as well, is all bearing fruit. Mm-hmm. And it's all coming, you know, improving all the time.
Good. And then just finally, in terms of sort of the cash, I did understand that you've requested the release of the escrow balance from Freenome for, is it £1.2 million? If you just when will you receive those funds or hope to receive those funds? And also, you know, in terms of giving you this kind of cash runway, presumably until, well, at least 12 months anyway, in the forecast period.
Yeah, so we received the funds already.
Oh, well done.
Thank you. And in our model, that does give us the cash runway through the next 12 months. So we fulfill our requirements for going concern that was signed off by the auditors at the end of February. And we had the amount we received in the escrow in our financial model for the year already. So, but, you know, cash is king. And, you know, what would be nice would be able to do more, to really do more to accelerate the commercial traction we're seeing, and to accelerate things like our marketing efforts, our PR efforts, all of which are fairly constrained at the moment by our budget profile, even with this escrow money. So never say never. I mean, it would be interesting. It would be good to have some more money to be able to do some of those things and help accelerate our sales even further.
Yeah. Okay, good.
One thing I'll leave you with, the beginning of next month in early June, we'll be at the Bio Conference in San Diego. It's the largest biopartnering conference in the world. 20,000 people, 50,000 people, but probably 10,000, 20,000 in the partnering stream alone. We're taking the whole commercial team out. I'm on a panel with two big pharma companies and a leading academician talking about the importance of autoantibody research and showcasing some of the projects we worked on as a company, both with the academician, but also with the pharma companies. And I'm really super excited about that.
And I'm guessing sort of, again, big picture, the momentum now in the business is really sort of coming through, isn't it? With the, as you say, with that sales team, sort of like getting the getting more leads and building that pipeline. And I guess the confidence and the sort of the excitement around the business is increasing.
It is. And it's a really nice feeling. And it's a testament to the hard work of everybody involved. I mean, it really is. I mean, everybody's worked really, really hard behind the scenes on this. We've worked as an SLT really hard to put into place all of these things. So it's very pleasing to see some of the success that we deserve coming through.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Martin, for those excellent insights, and best of luck out there in San Diego, and look forward in touching base when you come back.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. I hope I'll have a bit more of a tan by then.
If you've been in the UK, yeah, you got no chance.
No, exactly. Not with that weather. Anyway, thanks again.
Thanks then. Bye. The Vox Markets Podcast.
Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.